Welcome to ParentChildConnect.com. I am Olaolu Ogunyemi. How to use books to create teachable and memorable moments. My mom really sparked a love for story time within me. In fact, whenever I read books with my own children, I imagine her inflections, facial expressions, smiles, widening eyes, and excitement. She is exactly who I got my animated personality from while engaging children. So when I created my Parent-Child Connect, or P2C, book series, my goal was to develop resources for parents, teachers, and mentors to similarly create teachable and memorable moments of their own. I never imagined that I would have the opportunities to share my stories in front of thousands of children around the world. The support has been amazing. Several educators, librarians, and administrators have given me the opportunity to read and engage with their students. Of course, I collected a few notes during these engagements that will help me better serve the schools. Ultimately, each engagement has turned into a teachable and memorable moment using some of the basic fundamentals that I will share with you today. How to use books to create teachable and memorable moments. Number one, voice tone and inflections. You ever wonder why YouTube channels like Blippi Educational Videos for Kids have been so successful? It's because the creators have learned to entertain and engage children with their tone and inflection. Your tone and inflection draw the children in and brings the story to life for them. Through contextualization, they are learning to comprehend the words you are reading. And if there are pictures, the children's imaginations are transforming the pictures from two-dimensional to three-dimensional. I call this the Pee Wee Herman versus Clear Eyes Guy dynamic.
You can reel the children in with an exciting voice,
or you can bore them with a monotone voice.
Your choice. Yeah, I know those voice impressions were terrible, but moving on. Number two. Body language and expressions. Body language and expressions go hand in hand with tone and inflections. With the younger group, which is about toddler through probably about 8 year olds, I always try to keep my eyes wide, smile broad, chest out, and my arms and hands open. This is a welcoming posture, almost like I'm inviting them in to join me in this exciting world. For the older groups, which is about 9+, I usually begin by mirroring their body language and expressions, then gradually transitioning to a brighter and excitable demeanor. You have to read the room. Why? Because the younger group is usually more open to new things and excited to engage with you just because you seem, you know, fun. But that older group usually isn't eager to join you. They want to get to know you a little bit more before they warm up to you. They no longer identify as a child anymore. They prefer the title preteen. With that comes a perceived transition into adulthood and a disinterest in kiddie things. Well, that's okay. We'll bring the childlike excitement out of them. This body and expression mirroring technique may seem minuscule, but it has worked for me in every setting, from the classroom to the library to the church. Numerous parents and teachers have asked, how did you get them to open up like that? My answer was simple. I met them where they were. Number three, awareness of current trends. Recently, I was sitting in a presentation that one of my peers gave a group of Marines. The presenter made numerous references and used several memes to drive his point home. If used correctly, this can be an invaluable technique for a presenter. The keywords there are, if used correctly. During this presentation, The presenter referenced movies like The Lincoln Lawyer, which was released in 2011, Red Dawn, which was released in 1984, and A Christmas Story, which was released in 1983. These are all great movies and references. Yeah, the only issue is the majority of the people in the room were between the ages of 18 and 22, which means they were born between 2000 and 2004. So they had never seen those movies. He found himself standing in a room full of blank stares. That man couldn't flip through those slides quick enough. Side note, I had a similar circumstance when I found out my Marines didn't believe The Lion King, which was released in 1994, was the greatest Disney movie of all time. Some had never even seen it. Really? I digress. Integrating relevant topics and themes is a great tool, but it's important to understand your audience and their current interests. This, once again, allows you to meet the children where they are and connect with them on their level. Number 4, passion and energy. This one is simple. If you don't believe in what you're saying, the children you're engaging with won't believe in what you are saying. If you are dry, dull, and boring, the children will accurately believe you are dry, dull, and boring. See? Simple. They will become disengaged, and the entire session will be pointless. Your passion and energy is the driving force behind my first three suggestions, and it is how you connect your audience with the book you're reading to create a teachable and memorable moment. Number 5, be yourself. It's easy to read my first few suggestions and assume I'm encouraging you to be someone you're not. Well, I'm not. In fact, children will quickly realize any fake characteristics. As such, creating teachable and memorable moments is both a science and an art. In other words, simply systematically studying your target audience and attempting to apply your observations isn't enough. You have to add in creativity and imagination. Then, just like with fine art, the children will appreciate and connect with your intangible characteristics more than they appreciate your technique. Number 6, engage with whomever engages you. But don't forget to engage the quiet one. It is super easy to connect with the talkative children. Some people will consider it a success if even 5 out of 18 students are engaged. It makes the reader feel accomplished. Quite honestly, I absolutely love an engaged audience. The only issue is when in a group setting, even a small class, it's easy to overlook the quiet one. That is the one I look for. There are a litany of reasons a child would be quiet and or withdrawn, but I love giving them an opportunity to speak and feel heard. It builds their confidence and gives you an opportunity to receive immediate feedback from a person who may have otherwise been disengaged. Reel them in. They'll never forget it. Number 7. Slow down. You know, I wanted to be a rapper when I was younger. Yeah, I know that's a weird way to start this section, but let's just roll with it. I'm not talking about just any rapper. I wanted to rap like Twista or Busta Rhymes. You know, that kind of rap where the artist says about 280 words per minute. So it's no wonder I read and talk fast after practicing that for a few years. Now here's my advice for you. Slow down. You're not a rapper, so you're not going to entertain the children by reading that book fast. Of course, I say that jokingly because, like me, you're talking fast because of nervousness, not because you think it's entertaining. The way to avoid reading too fast is to schedule natural pauses during your practice runs. Obviously, the implied advice is that you practice and do dry runs before reading with children. even at home. Yep, some of you are thinking like Allen Iverson in the early 2000s. Practice. We're talking about practice. Yes, I'm suggesting you practice before game time so you're ready to engage children with energy and passion with the right speed, tone, and inflection. You see how this is all coming together? Let's keep going. Number 8, fight for attention. I'm going to park here for a couple of minutes because this one is critical to creating teachable and memorable moments. I've done engagements with parents, clients, teens, toddlers, teachers, basically all age ranges. One thing that each group has in common is a limited attention span. Many scholars like Barbara Gross Davis in Tools for Teaching and Philip C. Wainwright in The Effective, Efficient Professor, Teaching Scholarship and Service assert that attention begins to wane after about 10 to 15 minutes. There is even an often cited Microsoft report that says our attention span is only 8 seconds. Apparently, that's worse than a goldfish. Uh-oh. That can be a bit problematic when you're booked for 30 to 60 minutes. So how do you deal with this conundrum? Is it hopeless to try to engage for longer than 10 to 15 minutes? Lucky for us, there are a couple of articles that counter this limited attention span assertion. Attention span during lectures 8 seconds, 10 minutes or more was written by Neil A. Bradbury, and The Role of Attention in Learning in the Digital Age was co-authored by Jason M. Lodge and William J. Harrison. Unfortunately, they took longer than 10 to 15 minutes to read, so I didn't read them. Nah, I'm just kidding. I read them, and here are 3 quick points I gathered. First, we have to limit distractions as much as possible. Kevin Hart's team's latest stand-up is about 2 hours long. During this time, spectators secure their phones in individual yonder pouches. This is obviously to keep people from recording and broadcasting the show. However, the unintended effect is that this initiative forces spectators to pay attention to the show without the consistent distraction. Typically, an individual's attention span is broken when they attempt to multitask or split their focus. So if possible, pick a quiet room or a location without immediate access to mobile devices, toys, TVs, etc. Although we cannot accurately predict the infinite number of ways the brain can become distracted, we can temporarily restrict access to common distractions to increase focus and attention. I'll call the second thing I learned the focus cycle. As stated above, there are an infinite number of ways the mind can become distracted. For example, have you ever noticed the little lint and dust floating freely through the air while you're in a meeting? That's just one of the many fairly insignificant things that can steal our children's focus. With that in mind, we have to consistently work through the focus cycle. This is where the human brain focuses, then sometimes involuntarily loses focus. An easily recognizable outward sign of waning focus is drifting eyes. Your job is to identify these cues and use inflection, expressions, tone, body language, and visual aids to refocus your audience on the book you're reading. The last thing I learned was humans have limited capacity for visual information, so use your visual aids sparingly, even with picture books. Now this sounds pretty weird. I just told you to use your visual aids. Now I'm telling you to limit your visual aids even with a picture book. Let me explain before you call me crazy. Although picture books are full of illustrations, the illustrations should complement the theme. So really, you are directing the child's attention to how 2 or 3 pictures relate to the theme. I'll use my book, Crow from the Shadow, as an example. If you take a look at my front cover, I usually begin by pointing out the two contrasting images of Crow on the front cover. On the picture I'm using on my website, A is Crow after he learned to defeat the Shadow, and B is Crow before he learned how to defeat the Shadow. I use these contrasting images to highlight the book's theme. Then I constantly highlight how Crow is slowly transitioning throughout the story. Thereby, the children can enjoy the story while comprehending the topic without having to memorize each picture and setting. By the way, I dropped a link for a really good read aloud of Crow from the Shadow if you haven't read it already. This one was read on Storytime with Kayla. Check it out on YouTube. Number 9. Respect the teacher and or librarian and offer to be a resource. Well, this should be obvious, but you'd be surprised. The teacher and librarian will be the authoritative figure before and after you leave. They are the people who will begin and sustain what you are trying to do. In other words, you are collaborating with the teacher and or librarian to create teachable and memorable moments for the children. Both teachers and librarians have been extremely helpful in helping to maintain order, reinforcing themes, asking questions that can help the children later, and organizing continuing conversations. So give that teacher or librarian a shout out. Not only does that show that you appreciate them, but it gives them a bit of street cred with the children. Trust me, it means a lot to them. Number 10. What about teenagers? Some of you are thinking, yeah, this is cute for younger children, but it would never work for my teenager. Well, the beauty of this advice is it will work for teens, with some modifications. You probably won't be reading picture books with your teen, but nothing stops you from reading one of the books they're interested in, then discussing it in a relaxed setting. If they chose the book, they are interested in the topic. So by reading their books, not only are you gaining a better understanding of their perspective, you are establishing a common ground between the two of you. Yeah, but what if you don't have time to read their books? No problem. Just ask them about it. Start the conversation by saying something like, "Hey, I saw you were reading," and insert the name of the book. "That seems interesting. Tell me about it." Now, listen to this. Don't try to squeeze in a lecture or dominate these conversations. Allow the conversation to naturally progress. Believe it or not, these discussions will create some of the most heartfelt, teachable, and memorable moments. Number 11, have fun. You know, I couldn't end this blog without telling you to have fun. Reading is very exciting. And you are doing what it takes to increase literacy as you mentor, lead, and guide children. I am proud of you and the work you're doing. Let's continue to build teachable and memorable moments together. Thank you, and have a great week.